Hi, everybody. My name's Doreen, and I'm an alcoholic. Well, I was sitting there, and my heart started racing, and I was like, okay, God, you're on. So this looks like, you know, I always get excited. I used to think it was fear, but now I know it's excitement, you know, because, you know, for God to take a woman like me, who I believe, you know, that, you know, my kids just, you know, they ran away from me when I came in the door, and, you know, he made my skin crawl, you know, at the end of my drunkenness, and to be the person that I am today, I know it's a direct result of God in the 12 steps. It has nothing to do with me other than taking the actions that was outlined in the big book that, you know, my sponsor instilled in me, and what I try to do to help other women along the way. And I'll share as the book describes in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And I get really sometimes emotional because, you know, it's we are constantly in a process of change, you know, and right now I'm going through a change that I just see God in everything. And I think that I heard this man share the other night that it keeps you grateful, you know, and he always says that a grateful heart won't drink. And I think that's where I am today because, you know, there are signs along the road that, you know, my sponsor told me that somewhere in your drunk, you know, in your recovery, that there's going to come the time between you and the drink. And she said, and I hope you got the God of your own understanding. And I believe that because I've had that drink present itself many times in the 7 years that I've been in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my sobriety date's August 9th, 1998. I belong to the Harbor City Speakers Group. It's in South Baltimore. It's 701 South Charles Street. It's Christ Lutheran Church. We meet on Thursday nights at 7:30 or 8:30. Standard drunk time. That's what we call it. You know, in my home life, growing up, I'm the youngest of eight. And I was born and raised not more than maybe 5 or 6 blocks from where my home group is today. And I watched my dad. My dad was the drunk. That's not what makes me an alcoholic. Things that I had on the outside, my upbringing, the people in my life is not what makes me an alcoholic. I only learned it through the process of the 12 steps. I'm an alcoholic, as the book describes, because alcohol affects me differently than normal folk. I married a man who didn't drink. I watched how he would have 2 or 3, and it would confuse me. Because, see, he would say he was starting to feel it, and he didn't like that feeling. And, see, what makes me a real alcoholic is when I started to feel it, I liked that feeling. And I wanted to go past that. Like the book describes that euphoria, you know, it's like, take me out. I wanted to get out as fast as possible. And the, you know, I remember, I think, now going back and looking at my childhood, you know, my parents did the best they could with what they had. You know, and when I was growing up, I believed I didn't have nothing because I was so full of self. I couldn't see it then. I only realized that now that, you know, I had a roof over my head, I had food in my stomach, I had clothes on my back. You know, we never went with, you know, without anything. You know, and like I said, I'm the youngest of eight, so I had a lot ahead of me. You know, I got a lot of hand-me-downs because my parents never really had the money to buy all them clothes. So I got what was, you know, everybody else grew out of. And, you know, and I look at that stuff now, and it's like, you know, I used to, it's not that I was ashamed of that because, see, half the clothes my sisters had I wanted anyway, so I eventually got it, and, you know. So, but I would watch people, you know, all my life. And the same in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not so much as what people say. It's what they do. And I think it's all in the actions. And, you know, I'll share that, you know, in the steps of recovery. But I watched people. I had this one sister, man, I watched the way she drank, and I wanted to drink just like her. Because I saw a power within this sister, and I did not know it was alcohol, you know, at that time. I just know that, man, when she went to the bars and she come home, I would watch her, the change, you know, transformed her. And when I was old enough to get to the bars, I couldn't wait to get, I mean, my whole childhood, all I could do was wait till I could get to the bars, you know, so I could drink just like her. And, you know, she was more like a whiskey drinker, but I wouldn't touch hard liquor. Somewhere along the line, you know, these ideas that I'm going to share with you tonight, I don't know where they came from, but somewhere along the line, I picked them up. Now, I'm not saying they don't work for other people, but they just didn't work for me. So, you know, I watched this sister, and when I was old enough to get to the bars with her, I did. You know, we were like bar buddies, and I would never go to a bar alone. I always had to have somebody with me, and most of the people in my drunkenness were family members. I wouldn't drink with anyone outside, you know, the family other than, you know, people I worked with. you know, we'd go out every once in a while, and I couldn't really drink the way I wanted to because, you know, we had an impression there, you know, because I got to go back to work the next day, and they'll see how I drink, and I know they'll talk about me. You know, and then I got the people that are your bar people. You know, it's like you don't see them unless you're in the bar, and you grow up with these people in the bar. And I started working in, like, restaurants that were bars attached. So when I watched his sister, you know, she'd go in the bar, and she was pretty calm going in. And then all of a sudden, it's like, you know, I watched her put her heel in between some guy's head in the bar, and, you know, because he pushed my father off the stool, and I was like, yeah, get him, you know? It was like, I watched her put, you know, smash mugs in guys' faces, and I was like, man, where do you get the power to do that stuff? Because I hurt so bad inside, even growing up as a child, I don't know where these hurts and these fear and this pain came from, but all I know is I had walked around with this gaping hole, and I tried everything on the outside to continue to fill that hole. And we were talking before the meeting, it's like, where does that anger come from? It's all, I believe today, is a lack of God, the lack of power that, you know, we live. And when I work and I live on God power, I'm pretty whole. I'm comfortable with myself. I'm okay no matter where I am and who I'm with and what job I have or, you know, how much money. But see, when I start seeking that outside stuff, there's where that abstinence starts coming in, and that's when I start getting, the book describes as restless, irritable, and discontent, you know, and we're growing in that direction of perfection. It doesn't say we get perfect, you know, and I learned these things along the way in childhood. Of course, sisters got married off, so what do? You get married off. That's what you do, you know. Right out of high school, I got married at the age of 19. I always say that my gynecologist made that decision because I was 3 months pregnant when I got married. You know, it was like, but I had those morals that my parents instilled that, you know, you don't have sex before you get married, so I married the man I had sex with. It was just reversed, that's all, you know. But I had that idea, it's okay, because, see, alcoholics, we love to justify ourselves. So I've never justified myself to look bad. I've always justified myself to look good. So this is how I lived, you know, watching these people. They got the big car in the homes, you know, they got the great jobs. That was my, you know, okay, well, maybe if I had the big car, the home, and the great job, I'd be okay. All my life, you know, and I had fun in my drunkenness. I took up drinking at the age of 18, you know, pursuing that feeling. That feeling, I had fun with it, the family functions we all had, you know, fun in the family. Most of the people I drank with, like I said, are family, you know, birthday parties, Christmas, Thanksgiving, you know, it was always, drink was involved. You know, I never knew a life without drinking. When I read that in those pages of the big book when it said our drink life was the only one we knew, I was like, oh my God, how did they know that? You know, because they did it before me. And see, all that was done before me, so that's how they know this stuff, because they've experienced it, and they laid it out in these pages to let us know that we can continue doing what we're doing and get what we get, or we can follow the directions that's in the first 164 pages, and this is a lot easier when I practice it. Definitely, you know, a lot easier when I practice it. So toward the end of my drunkenness, and I'm going to share, at the age of 19, married right out of high school, have a child. By the time I'm 24, there's 3 kids involved in the family, you know, because that's what I thought. If I had a child, I'd be okay. You know, I kept having kids, and, you know, I thought that would fix me. And then the kids just, somewhere along the line, I don't know how they got undisciplined, and, you know, really didn't have any, you know, it couldn't have anything to do with me, you know, and I had fun, you know, the parties at the house, the kids enjoyed mom when she was drinking. And see, when I share about that dad drinking, see, I'd watch him. I never saw any fun in my dad's drunkenness, because he would come home, he liked to flip tables, he liked to throw things, you know, and I'd watch my mother have a nervous breakdown at the kitchen table. So I watched this stuff, and, you know, as we all say, you know, anybody that I've heard share from a podium, that I'll never be like fill in the blank. There's always one person that you've watched in your entire upbringing that you'll never want to be like that person. So that's what I said to myself, you know, because I remember that feeling of uncomfortableness as soon as dad walked in the door, that, you know, the family, the kids would take off running because we didn't know what was going to happen. So when my kids shared that with me, and see, I couldn't see this process happening. See, when you're in the depths of alcoholism, you don't think you're harming anybody but yourself. You know, I always said, I'm home. I'm with my kids. I brought my kids up. I grew up with them. You know, in my whole drunkenness, I grew up with my children. Because for the first 5 or 6 years until my youngest went off to school, I was a house mom. You know, I stayed home. I tried dead end. I would always say, I stayed at a job for no more than 6 months. I was constantly changing jobs, part-time jobs, this job, that job. The medical field, that once I finally got into the medical field in 93, this is the longest I've ever stayed in any position in my entire life. You know, I could probably count 20 to 30 different jobs I've had since the age of 15. Because, see, I think constant change. See, I never looked at when I got uncomfortable. I always looked at it's your fault. See, I was afraid to face my own actions, my own responsibility, so I would always run, you know, when I knew they were going to fire me, and instead I quit. You know, that's how, I don't know where it came from, because it was all up in my head. It was all up here. So like I said, by the time I'm 24, we're having fun. You know, I'm having fun in my drunkenness. The book described it, and I love the way they put it. It says, somewhere along the line, I could have stopped drinking. I could have, but I was having so much fun at it. Why would you? If you're having fun with alcohol, you ain't going to want to stop. You know, that's how I was. So I crossed that line. You know, I'm the real alcoholic, as they describe. You know, I resemble myself but little when I put that booze into my system. See, I was always trying to be the right mom. You know, I wanted to give my kids. I heard this somewhere along the line. I picked this up. You know, I want to give my kids everything my parents didn't give me. But I was giving them everything my parents gave me. They had a roof over their head. They had food in their, you know, in their stomach. They lived on oodles and oodles a lot, but that was food, you know. I mean, because that's all I could give them at that time. You know, we were living on cut-off notices, turn-off notices. We were moving every 3 years. When I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a 20-year marriage when I got here. You know, I had a home. It was going in foreclosure. But, you know, this is what I believed. When I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and people were sharing that they had lost the homes, the jobs, the cars, and all that stuff, my alcoholism was telling me, oh, I'm not that bad yet, you know? But I got done on the inside, and I think that's where we need to share, where the alcoholism and, you know, where it really is that gaping hole. And I used everything that I could to fill that void. That void, as when I was a child, I love to share this part. When I was 5 years old, my grandmother lived on the water, and when I get around the water, that is where I am most inspired. I get cold chills just thinking about sitting near, you know, the ocean or a lake, or when I drive past a stream, it's just like, there's my connection. I mean, I see God and all that, but at this time, you know, I was 5 years old, and I remember running down to the back of my grandmother's house, because she lived on the water, and right at the end of the bottom of her yard, she had these two real big, tall Christmas trees. And I knew there was something out there, you know, and ever since I was about 5 or 6 years old, I really wasn't all that comfortable in my own skin. But I remember running down to those trees, and I would, like, hide in the one big tree. So nobody could see me. I don't know who was looking for me, but it was just that, you know, it was like so nobody could see me. But at that time, and that split second, I knew there was something bigger than me that was taking care of me. And I felt, I always share, is that God's hands were just wrapped around me and warmth. And I felt that presence. I felt that cool, you know, that comfortableness. And I think that's what it's all about, you know. And then somewhere along the line, society tells you, you got to have this, you got to have that. And, you know, more and more, you know, God is just diminished and everything on the outside is front and foremost. And that's how I lived, you know. Like I said, I got the big house. I got the cars. You know, I got him. I got them. You know, the kids are running around. They don't listen anymore. And I'm living up in my head at this time, and it's like I can't take it no more. I want to die on a daily basis, and I don't know what's wrong with me. You know, and I worked in the medical field. So it wasn't that I was going to go around telling people how I was feeling, because I knew where they put people like me. I've watched it. And like I said, I'm a people watcher. So I watched these people. My family did a divine intervention and put my sister in. It's called a Shepherd Pratt, which is another they call it a nut house in Baltimore. You know, it's not to put these places down, but that's just how I've heard it through other people. And I watched them put her in this, you know, nut house. And about 2 months later, she got out of this nut house and she took her life. And what happened? She shot herself in the head. Why? That's where it is. That's all that noise. I can't shut it up. And I watched her. I wanted to do that. But now I've seen the devastation that my family's going through, and like, how am I going to do something like that? Where will I get the power to do it? So now I'm living on a daily basis with this thought. Then I had this one thought where if I just drive my truck over a bridge and, you know, and I had a vision that I lived on a daily basis with. It was like, I know a good 3 to 5 years before I came to Room of Alcoholics Anonymous, my truck would go over the bridge and it would crash. And I have this sense of ease and comfort, like, it's over, thank God. And then I'd crawl out the window and I'd be like, get back in the truck. You're not supposed to crawl out the window. I mean, I'm yelling at myself in my head. And now this is how sick I really am. You know, it was like, I want out, but I can't tell nobody about it. I'm pushing him away. I'm pushing them away. You know, I'm living in total paranoia. This is how I was the last 3 to 5 years of my drunkenness. You know, the booze, it was just there. I needed it. It became a necessity. You know, even if it was to run home and just have one or two, I used to always say to calm that nerve. Now, I had plenty of nerves. But it was like that nerve, you know that nerve. You know, you just left work. You just left work and you know they're talking about you, and sometimes they'd be over there amongst themselves talking, and I'd have to go ask them, are you guys talking about me? And they're like, no, why would we be talking about you? And I only realized through the 12 steps that that's all I was thinking about was myself, so of course they had to be talking about me. So I go over and ask them. I mean, this is how I live, total paranoia. It had to be about me. I was so wrapped up in the self, I couldn't see it until I did the 12 steps with my sponsor. And now I'm only beginning to see the depths of what my alcoholism is truly about. See, when I first started going through the steps, I got down to the book describes the cause and conditions. But I believe that as we continue to grow and continue to make more mistakes in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm only reaching down to the actual root of that problem, which is me. And I couldn't see that until I did the steps with my sponsor. And I didn't have a clue what this thing was about. Believe me, I'm a first nighter. I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous because I had a brother with 4 years when I first came into these rooms. I watched him. See, watching again. I watched him change. He respected, you know. He didn't come over when I invited him to parties anymore. I was really upset about that because, see, he was my drinking buddy. And then I had this other sister, the one I was telling you about. Somebody had, I remember they asked her if she could not drink for 90 days, and she did. And that upset me because it was like, now what am I going to do? Because I don't have her to go out and drink with. So toward the end of my drunkenness, I was like staying home. And, you know, at the end of the pay period, Friday, I'd go to the grocery store, get the check cashed, and right next door there's the liquor store. So now I'm drinking at home. You know, I got the 30-pack of Bud Light and the gallon of margarita because that's how I drink on the weekend. And there's nothing left over on Monday. But, see, I don't have a problem with alcohol. I don't see this stuff. See, I believed alcoholics, now these are my ideas, and I had a lot of contempt prior to investigation, and I think when we come into rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, we all do that. It's all contempt. You know, I sure is content and judge you in a second, because see, I don't want to admit it myself. So if I can contempt and judge you, then that means I can't look at me. So, see, I did that, a lot of contempt. So I thought, well, alcoholics were people who drank hard liquor. I never touched hard liquor. At least I didn't think so until I actually took an honest look at my own drunkenness. You know, and then I watched that, you know, alcoholics people drink before noon. So I wouldn't drink before noon. Where these ideas come from, I don't know. But they're the ideas I brought to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. They had to get smashed, like the book describes over and over again, you know, depths. You know, I mean, this stuff has to get smashed. No idea, if I have any reservation whatsoever that I'm different from you, then I can't have this. No reservation whatsoever. You know, I've done other things in my drunkenness that's helped me stay up a couple of hours. You know, I got to get up for the kids, so I'm taking this other stuff to help me prolong my wakingness. But that doesn't mean that I'm anything other than an alcoholic, because, see, I used that stuff alcoholically. I used anything that I could put in my system to change me. I did it to extreme. but I'm an alcoholic. Point blank, period. You know, I'm nothing other than that. So I remember that the end of my drunkenness, the kids were like, Dad, we don't want to see Mom come home anymore. You know, they're taking off out the door as soon as I walk in the door. I only know that feeling because I had it when I was a child. So that's how I knew what they were feeling. Only did I know that through a ninth step. I didn't know that prior to the ninth step. Because, see, I thought I was doing pretty good with my kids. You know, and I was. I wasn't as bad as I thought I was. Believe me, I thought I was like the worst mom in the world. But at the age of 19, how can you be a mom at 19? I mean, you're a kid yourself. I see my daughter today. She's 20 years old. Well, actually, I have two grandkids today. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, looking at these girls. They're 19, 20 years old. I'm like, oh, my God. Imagine what my mother was thinking. She's 19. She don't know how to raise a kid. Because I'm looking at them like, they don't know how to raise a kid. You know? It's like I'm watching this stuff again. So I get to the end of my drunkenness on a daily basis. I come home. My hand hits that doorknob, and I don't want to be at that house. Those kids just don't listen anymore. He makes my skin crawl. I try to stay up as late as I possibly can because I know if I fall asleep, I've got to get up and go to that job the next day. I don't know where I believed that time was going to stop if I stayed up so I wouldn't have to go to work the next day, but that's how I thought. You know, if I just stay up, if I don't go to sleep, then that means I don't have to get up right away to go back to work. You know, and the cycle over and over and over again. The end of my drunkenness, I had... It was, you know, family members, we all decided to go out and party. And I set up, you know, my drunk like I always do. Two beers in the shower, because you don't go anywhere without drinking first. You know, got my ride, because I believed in my heart, I could tell you the day I walked in Alcoholics Anonymous that I didn't drink and drive. But only will more be revealed through the 12 steps. And I tried my best not to drink and drive, shall I say, but I did. And then I remember my son, he just got his learner's permit, and they said that he can, if as long as he has a licensed driver in the car, it's okay for him to drive. They didn't say they had to be coherent. They just said a licensed driver. So I was the licensed driver. He was going to pick me up after my drunkenness, because that's what we do, you know. And then I remember I started out my drunk like any other drunk, you know, drink as much as I possibly can, as fast as I can, because, see, I got to go to work. You know, this was on a Saturday night, so I knew I needed a day of recuperation because I knew how I drank. You know, it was like the hangovers, dry heaves for at least 6 to 7 hours, and then by 8 o'clock on Sunday night, I'm ready to go. That's how I drank. And, you know, I had the hangover remedy, the Lipton noodle soup, got the Coke ready the next day, got the kids trained on demand to bring it to me every so many hours with the aspirin, and, you know, because they know I don't keep it down right away, so they got to keep bringing it up to me. And so that's how I lived. You know, that's how I lived. And the end of my last drunk, on August the 8th, I was going out to it was a benefit for breast cancer. It was a dance, like, kind of party thing. I remember it was me, my niece and nephews, you know, because, like I said, most of the people I drank with were family members. And I remember I started out, people were saying hi to me, and I was just like, I was centered. I mean, I was focused. I was like, where's the cake? That's all I wanted to know. I mean, if I look back in hindsight, I remember I was walking through everybody. Where's the booze? That's all I want to know. I wasn't worried about saying hi. I wanted the booze. And then I ended up again standing in this other bar. Somebody had told me that I sang karaoke that night, and I don't remember it. And then I remember I was standing, I woke up, now I'm a blackout drinker if you haven't recognized this along the story, but, you know, that's, I believe the Oblivia, if you didn't black out, something was wrong with you, you didn't drink right. You know, that's what I thought. And then I remember that I was stood up, I was standing in the middle of a dance floor, and I was doing the electric slide, and everybody else was in the opposite direction. You know, I was like, people were stepping on me, and I was, like, going the opposite direction of where they were going. I was treading all over everybody. They were treading all over me. So I finally give up and sat down, and then I woke up in the middle of a city block. And about two blocks ahead of me, my sister-in-law was up there, and I had taken my glasses off because I used to sweat so bad. I remember I tried every deodorant on the market. Never looked at it as being booze sweat. Now my pores, I thought the deodorant didn't work. You know, I tried this one deodorant. It was called Certain Dry. And what it actually does is clog your pores under your armpit. I mean, it clogs it. to where you can't sweat out of your armpit. I was like, that's sick. But I tried it, you know. Hey, I'll try anything, but I'll not look at the boobs. Because I never wanted to look at the boobs. You know, my kids used to joke with me in the, early in my drunkenness that they were like, Mom, look at Mom, Mom's an alcoholic. And I'd laugh with them. And toward the end of my drunkenness, they were like, look at Mom, Mom's an alcoholic. And boy, did my attitude change. But see, I crossed that line. I actually stopped and I thought, am I really an alcoholic? Split second later, no. I got the home, I got the job, you know, I got all this stuff. So this is where it turned for me. And I remember I took off running, and I went to go after my sister-in-law, because she yelled for me to run. And I hit this handicap ramp, and my face bounced across the asphalt. But I remember sitting up in the middle of the street, and I reached up, and I grabbed a hold of my face, and I came down with a hand of blood. And my sister-in-law was like, oh, my God, Doreen, please don't touch your face. And I said, Debbie, it can't be that bad. Because I didn't feel it. I didn't feel the impact. I mean, no hands, straight out. Boom, face, right across the street. And I looked down, my knees were bleeding, and, you know, my lip was kind of hanging off, so I pushed it back up because I don't want to go to the hospital. Now I explain why my face looks like this. You know, and I remember getting back to her house, and she kept saying to me, please, Doreen, don't touch your face. I said, Debbie, it can't be that bad. There she is. God, I hope you all see this sight. Because this is the end, you know, it was the end for me. And I don't know what it's going to take for you. I can only share my desperation, and this is where it took. I remember looking in her eyes, and I said to myself, my God, Doreen, what the hell have you done to yourself this time? I wasn't laughing anymore. Now, I've fallen many times. Believe me, I've gone home with bruises I couldn't even explain. But this time, I saw it. I believe that that was that moment of clarity that a lot of people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, they share with us. That God stepped in just for that second and let me truly see what this was all about. And what did I do? I called a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I hadn't thought of my brother in 4 years in relation to alcohol. You know, I respected what he was doing. Believe me, I did. I tried my best not to drink around him because I didn't think wine coolers was really drinking. You know, I could justify it. So what I did is I called him. And he did exactly what we do. He laid the sister aside. And he came and talked to one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. He showed up on my front porch. And he brought that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was going through that big book. And I kept saying to him, why are you reading that book? You need to listen to me. He said, you know, we don't think about that when we're, you know, it's like, it's all about me, don't you know? But he did exactly what this program has teaches us all to do. When all else, you know, when it comes down and one alcoholic calls, my life goes on the side and I show up. Because this is my lifeline. And I didn't know that then, I only know it today. This is my lifeline. This is what we do. This is our fifth tradition. You know, this is where I show up to share my experience, strength, and hope to help another alcoholic achieve sobriety, to let you know you're not different. See, I believed I was different. Now, a lot of things had to get smashed in the first probably 3 to 5 years of my drunkenness. I mean, in Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't really see how much alcoholic I was until I started going through the steps. And I believe where my experience grows today and even still today is taking other people through the steps. You really want to know how your alcoholism is? Take somebody else through the steps. Because, see, there's where I discovered who I truly was and what I saw. You know, and that's how the experience continues to grow. And I remember I called him. And what scared me the most is when I hung that phone up, I had this, it was almost like my blood just drained right out of me. And I was like, oh my God, I just committed myself to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was like, I wanted to call him back. And I was like, oh no, I can't do that because, you know, I worry about what people think of me. So I was like, now I've got to do what he suggests. I did. I was like, why would I call him? I'm sitting there, all this question, you know, all of a sudden the thoughts start coming in. Why did I do that? You know, how come? And I'm not an alcoholic. And so he showed up. And he took me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, which was his home group at the time. And he kept saying, "Doreen, you need to get a sponsor." He said, "You need to do these steps." Now, I didn't know what this stuff was. I heard somewhere along the line. Now, I don't know where this comes from, but it's like I said, I listen to what people say, especially when I'm new. I'll use whatever information I can when I'm new to prove I'm not an alcoholic. So what I did is I heard this 90 and 90. So I was like, okay, well, I guess I thought, I've never really stayed sober for any 90-day consecutive. You know, never have I ever in my drunkenness. It took me 19 years to get here. You know, from the age of 18 to I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 37. So it was like watching that, you know, it was like never have I ever really stayed sober because I was drunk every weekend from the time I was 18 till I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. If not, toward the end of my drunkenness, it was at least 5 out of 7 nights. Yeah, I wasn't a daily drinker yet, but I drank as much as I could when I could. You know, I joined pool leagues, bowling leagues, all kind of leagues. But if it didn't have drink in it, believe me, I wasn't joining it, you know. I remember my husband at the time kept saying to me, "Let's go practice for pool." And I was like, "Do you drink there?" And he's like, "No, it's a pool hall. You don't drink, you know." I was like, "Well, no, I don't really feel like it. I'm sick, got the flu, whatever. You know, I could add to it." But I remember my brother kept taking me. He took me to my first couple of meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Women were giving me their numbers, and I was throwing them away. But see, I don't want to get convinced yet. But I also look back in hindsight. Everything was necessary for me to stand where I am today. I had to do that. I had to throw those numbers away. I had to go where I had to go to. I got to the place where I was desperate enough to accept the help that I received today. And I remember that I met this woman. I was about 2 weeks sober, and somebody asked me if I knew where this church was, which later it became my home group. And I was like, "Oh my God!" I mean, I got excited. I was like, "I knew something." That's why I was excited. Because see, all my life I didn't want to let you know I didn't know. Because see, I have to make something up to impress you. Because that's all I did all my life. I was like the chameleon. You know, if you were talking about so and so, I would talk about her. I didn't even know her, but I'd talk about her just so I could be a part of what you were, you know, in the clique or whatever. You know, and then later I'd be talking to the person we just talked about. It's like, you know, it was no clue. I had no clue. I had no social skills whatsoever, believe me. So I remember I woke up, you know, I these women are giving me their numbers. I'm throwing them away. And then I met this lady. I showed up at this group 2 weeks sober. I knew the place. And this girl that I was traveling with at the time, she hadn't become my sponsor or anything. I remember talking to her about sponsorship because I didn't know what it meant. And she's like, "Well, we'll talk about that later." And I was like, "Okay." So I was just traveling with her. And I remember we showed up at that meeting, and this woman was sitting on the front steps of the church. And I knew a face. And I remember saying, you know, "Oh, my God." You know, I hadn't seen her in years. Her and I had grown up in the same neighborhood. We crossed paths many a times in our drunkenness. Now, I don't know if you could see God working in my life, but now in hindsight, I can see where God was always working in my life up to that point. Because God knew. I knew a face. So, didn't ask her at that point. I didn't believe she was an alcoholic. I thought she was there to support her husband. Don't know where that idea came from, but I think as I look back in hindsight and be truthful to myself, I think that's where the whole deal starts. Is you got to get honest, you know, with yourself, be truthful to yourself. Yeah, you know, I can lie to anybody, but see, I'm the one that's asleep at night. So I think today is like after going through the 12 steps, I've kind of grown a conscious, you know, that I have to be truthful to myself, so I can sleep at night, you know, so I can be okay in my own skin. And I knew her. So this is where I love to share that, you know, I'm going to meetings, 90 and 90. I don't know where that idea came from, but I did it. And I also heard in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that you go to as many meetings as you drank. So I can use that information if I'm new. So I figured, well, I didn't drink on Tuesday, so I don't need to go to a meeting. And I didn't. You know, it's like sometimes we do have to watch what we say in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because then I tell you, a new person will snatch a hold of that first, "Yeah, I can use that. I don't have to do that because they said so." You know, so I watched. Yeah, I did it. And about 2 months later, and I always say, you know, it was at the end of my 90 days. You know, I believe God allows us to go and do whatever we have to do to get to that place of desperation. And 90 days physically sober, and I'm saying physically as I stand today. and I'm sitting in my shower, I'm standing in my shower, I just snapped at my daughter again. Now, the first couple of months, you know, I was feeling good. The wounds heal. You know, all the outsides heal. You know, and the book describes that, you know, the thought of that pain a month or a week or a year ago, you know, eventually that will go away. That pain will go away because I believe God has also given us the built-in forgetters. You know, that we don't relive that pain. And it was like that was healing. The wounds were healing. I'm starting to feel good. And then I'm thinking, of course, maybe I'm now an alcoholic, you know. But then that day, I remember my daughter, I started snapping at her. Now, I'm not going to meetings, you know. I don't have to go to that many meetings because they told me so. And then I remember I'm standing in my shower and I'm crying. Now, if you're an alcoholic type, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. I have no steps and have no booze. And I'm standing in my shower and I'm hollering, you know, I'm crying. I know deep down in my gut, I'm going to drink, and it scares me to death. I don't know what to do. I don't have a clue. I've used the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for that first 90 days. I had a temporary sponsor. I don't want to forget this. And she had me writing my first step. But see, I was willing to do what any of you people suggested that I do. I didn't have a clue. I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was about. So I was willing to follow anybody's directions. You know, I think that if anybody come up, if they told me to stand on my head in the corner and, you know, sing, I'm not too good at it, but I would do it. I would do it. If that's what I believed that was going to keep me sober, I would have done it. So I followed whatever direction it was this woman was giving me. But I believe, honestly, in my experience, that it happened in here. It wasn't what I was doing. It was like something in here wasn't changing. You know, I was writing the first step, went right home and wrote it, just like she suggested. I didn't question it. I did it. But it wasn't changing in here, and I wanted to drink so bad it scared me to death. So that Thursday night, and I remember the date, it was November 15th of 98, I'm crying, God help me, I can't do this anymore. See, as I look back in hindsight, on August 9th, 1998, I called my brother, and I asked him for help. But truly, I wasn't convinced until November 15th. That is where the drink had presented itself, and I knew I was going to drink, and I didn't know what to do about it. And it scared me to death because I still had that back in my mind. I had that face, you know, that girl, one staring me in the mirror, and I didn't want to be her anymore. I didn't want to be there anymore. I didn't want that pain. I believed I came in here, I just wanted to stop hurting. I was tired. I didn't want to hurt anymore. I didn't want to hurt my kids anymore. You know, I didn't want to live that life that I was living no more. I mean, I wanted out. So I remember three blocks from my house, I showed up at this meeting that I showed up several times that my brother's sponsor told me he was doing, and he never showed up. So I was building the resentment on that one. Didn't even know what a resentment was until I did the fourth step. You know, and I remember I showed up at this meeting, and this woman was standing there. Again. And I said to her, oh my God, what are you doing here? She says, well, I was asked to speak at this meeting here. It was a step meeting. She was on the 12th step. And I remember she said to me, this gives me cold chills because I can only see in hindsight. I cannot see the process that I'm going through. It's only in hindsight do I see where God truly works in my life. She said, I don't know why I'm doing this meeting. I just did it 2 weeks ago. I know why you're doing that meeting. Because that's what saved my life. She showed up. I was ready. I was at the gates of insanity and death. Didn't even know it. I couldn't have put it in words. I just know I hurt so bad. I wanted to drink so bad, and I didn't know what to do. So I showed up. I mean, at least I did that much. And we're not saying you're showing up. Because somewhere along the line, God's going to get a hold of you. Whether you like it or not, or whether you understand it or not, he will step in. Because enough pain is enough pain. And I looked at her, and I was like, oh my God. I remember sitting at the end of that table. I was crying because I just got to a fight with my daughter. You know, she was 14 at the time. And I looked at her, you know, I didn't look up much. Except there was one thing that she did say that attracted me. Now, this is what attracted me to Alcoholics Anonymous, because remember, I'm in the rooms of people who are losing homes and cars and jobs and all that stuff. Later on, that was removed, so I just want to correct myself that I never lost any of that, but later on, it was removed in my recovery. But just at that point, when she shared this one thing, she said, because of her sponsors, the God of her sponsors' understanding, the 12 steps, and sponsorship, that she stood comfortable in her own skin. I looked up at her. For some odd reason, I don't know where this came from, I knew she was comfortable in her own skin. It wasn't a fake. It wasn't like something she put on. For some, and I never knew what comfort in my own skin ever was. But for some reason, I knew she was telling me the truth. I don't know where that came from. Well, I do now. But that saved my life. And I wanted what she had. And that was the attraction of Alcoholics Anonymous. See, I used to, in the beginning, put my sponsor on a pedestal. But I only know today it was the God within her who has touched the God within me. And he was ready and I was ready and we opened up to each other. So I asked my brother if I could change sponsors because I didn't have a clue. You know, I didn't know. I would have stayed with that lady in the beginning. If it would have, well, it probably would have killed me. I don't know. I can't say it would or it wouldn't. I had to go there first. You know, I had to go there first. So I remember I asked this woman, called her up, you know, hello, and how you doing? Got to get all the, you know, introductions out of the way. I'm dying here. I need your help. But, hey, how you doing? How's the family? Because I knew a face, you know, I got to, oh, just cut. She cut right through the crap. Thank God. Thank God. She said, what are you trying to ask? And I said, well, yeah, because that was hard. That was so hard. It was like, I remember the fear welled up in me, and I was like, would you sponsor me? She said, yes. Meet me here. It was a Sunday. She said, Sunday, this was Thursday. She asked me to meet her on Sunday night at this group, and I showed up. Imagine that. And she asked me two questions in the beginning, and I asked the women I sponsor the same question. See, I don't change anything. Because if I change it, what makes me think it's going to work for them? I have to do it the way I've done it. No bars hold. You know, it's just like, this, honey, this is what I thought. It's been working for me for 7 years. I'm pretty happy about it. So why would I want to change it to suit you? Or why would I change anything? And I know, how am I going to know if it's going to work for you or not? I don't. So she showed up. I showed up, you know. She asked me the question. She said, are you willing to go to any lengths for your recovery? And I said, yes, I am. I didn't know what that meant. She said, are you willing to go to a meeting every night? And I said, yes. But I like to stay home Tuesdays because I watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I haven't seen that show in over 7 years, so it's just like, you know, that idea had to get smashed. It definitely had to get smashed. But what truly has to happen, as the book describes, that we do have to let go of our old ideas, absolutely. Now, how do I know if it's an old idea? Because it don't work no more. It don't work no more. And for me, I've learned that over trial and error, like I've shared before the meeting. I've had to go through a process of change. I've had to go through a process of letting go. I've had to go through a process of constantly just becoming more aware of where God works in my life and where I have no control over the situation. You know, because it's not that I've taken my will back. I believe that God lets us go wherever we have to go. But my sponsor always shares with me, don't go too far. Because see, that drink will present itself again and again. Because we only have a disease that's at arrest. We're not cured. You know, I have recovered from that hopeless state of mind, Amadi, the one I shared with you coming to the Rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I have no longer had a compulsion or desire to pick up a drink. God has removed the drink problem like the book describes. So now I've got to grow up. You know what I was scared of? I heard this lady share in a meeting one time. She said she was afraid to ask this woman to be her sponsor because she knew she'd have to do something about it. That now she'd have to actually start doing something about it. Instead of just sitting in these meetings, you know, when she asked this woman, she knew, if I ask this woman, I'm going to have to do something about my alcoholism. And that scared her. And that's the same how, you know, when I felt, you know, it was like, but then, you know, I got to the place where I was more afraid not to ask my sponsor than to ask her. I was more afraid of not doing what my sponsor suggested than what she suggested. Because, see, this is the life I have today. And it's a direct result of the 12 steps, God and my understanding, and sponsorship. I still need a sponsor today. I don't want to think that I ever can go without a sponsor. To see that, that means I think something that I need. And we were just sharing in the meeting, before the meeting, that my mind that's created the problem is not the one that can come up with the same solution. You know, the same mind can't come up with the solution to the problem that's already created. And they used to say to me in the beginning, a sick mind can't fix a sick mind. So I need help, you know, and I will constantly need help. And that's a good thing today. I'm not afraid to ask for help. But I always ask for is like when I'm like all, you know, tied up in self. But that's okay because that's the way it's supposed to happen. My sponsor immediately took me through the steps, and the way I say immediately, within 2 weeks, I was writing my fourth step. I didn't have a problem with it. I knew somewhere along the line that this had to be done. I wasn't afraid of the fourth step. I don't know where the fear comes from with people. It's just like, I wanted to do a fourth step. If this would, like, at least diminish some of the pain that I was having, I wanted it gone. I wanted it all out. I knew all those things I had done since when I was 5, 6 years old. I knew that when people told me, you know, God doesn't like it when you do things like that, and I knew what things that was. I wasn't stupid. Even as a child, I knew that if I did those things, God did like it. Now, I don't know where that God came from. As the book describes, you know, they're my childhood ideas of God. Now, I've brought a lot of childhood ideas into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in an adult body. That's all it is. So now I've got to get rid of those childhood ideas. How do I do that? Fourth step. You know, what makes Doreen tick? That's what my sponsor called it. She said, we're going to get down, as the book describes, the cause and conditions. She took me in the book. She also said to me, she said, this is the only defense between your alcoholism and my alcoholism. See, because women, I believe men, I can't speak for the men, but I can only speak for the women. Alcoholics of my type is, I love to take control of things. And I want to control sometimes even the women I sponsor. You know, thank God for the 12 steps and the books, the first 164 pages, you know, because I don't want to see people have pain. You know, I know there's a solution. And it is hard for me to let the women that I sponsor sometimes do the things that they have to do to get that pain. And my sponsor also shared with me, she said, I will not deny anybody the pain they have to go through to find the God of their own understanding. You know, I was reading in the Daily Reflections a couple days back about, I definitely don't want to stand in the way of somebody else's spiritual growth, nor my own. You know, and that has been a process. It has been, believe me, I've sponsored women. The women that I've sponsored over the years has been, you know, through the process of the 12 steps. Like I said, my sponsor took me through the steps. I did the fourth and fifth step with her. You know, and the book describes that there's other ways, but I did it with my sponsor. I trusted, you know, her. I knew the face. See, I believe that God, I trusted, that I would trust her. Now, along the line, that trust has grown deeper. You know, and now it was like, I remember I went in her house, it was daylight. When I come out, it was dark. And my head hurt. I cried, I come out, I had this massive headache. That was a thorough fifth step. You know, thorough fifth step. And I remember I couldn't wait to get home and do 6 and 7. I didn't even know what it was. But all I know is she directed me in that book. She said, I want you to go home, take this book, open it up. Just as it describes, you know. Like I said, she took me through that book. She shared her experience with me. She said, this is what I've done. She never said, you're going to do this. She said, this is what I've done. So I did the same thing. I remember I laid the book open. And she said, put your papers on the bed and look at it. Look at all what we just went through. You know, my fifth step, laying on that bed. And I looked at it. You know, all of it. The fear, sex conduct, you know, the resentment. Like I said, I didn't think I had a resentment. I know I didn't like a lot of people when I got here. But I didn't know what a resentment was. So I laid it on the bed. And I was ready. I honestly, as I look back in hindsight, I was ready. I was ready to have God remove all that stuff. My sponsor puts it this way. She said, there's nothing like a thorough fourth and fifth step to get you ready for 6 and 7. Because here's where it's removed. And this is where it all begins. You know, I had that brief moment of, as the book, you know, somebody had described it as an at-one-ment. When I walked out of my sponsor's house, that hole was full. It was full for a moment. But it was there. And I felt it. I experienced what the book describes as I was delighted. Because it was gone. I couldn't think of anything more. I wanted it all out. And it all came out. Now later, things were revealed to me more. Because I believe God believes, you know, you can only handle so much in one time. But that was like the chip of the boulder. You know, we all carry these boulders. And I think the initial first step is just the chip of that little boulder. Because later on in life, and as we grow, we get down to the root, as the book describes. And I was listening, I think we were listening to a program this morning, is that I can cut the tree down, but the tree's going to grow back if you don't get into the roots. I could pull the weed. If I don't get the roots, that weed's coming back up. So it's just as I look, as the book describes, that selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of our problem. And I was like, isn't that amazing, you know? So the fourth step is just kind of like you cut the tree, but now later in life we're going to get down to the root. You know, I just saw what made me tick, the selfishness, self-centeredness, you know, retaliation, step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate, and I wonder why they were mad at me, you know, because I stepped on their toes. I couldn't see what part I played in it. That's why I need a sponsor. See, because when I look out, it's their fault. But when I do a fourth and fifth step, it's my fault, and I can't see that. So I need at least another human being, as the book describes in the fifth step, that I tell my whole life story to. My whole life story. Even those deep, dark secrets, all those sexual things that I said I wasn't going to tell a person. In my life, it got out on that paper. I wasn't afraid of it. Once it got on the paper, the fear kind of diminished over time. You know, and then it was like when I got to my sponsor, I was a little butterfly when I walked into her house. Now the ninth step, I'd like to share a bit on that. I have a few minutes left. When I first started my steps in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was at home, had my kids, and all that. You know, I went home, as the book describes, with the spiritual intoxication. I did nothing but talk of spirituality morning, noon, and night. He needed to go to Al-Anon. He needed Al-Anon. They needed Alateen. But I'm feeling good now. Y'all got to get good with me now. You know, it's like, I wanted them all. They got to get good with me. My daughter got to the place, and she said to me, Mom, she said, stay out of my face. I'm tired of hearing you preach. Oh, how dare her. But as I look back in hindsight, I was preaching morning, noon, and night. And the book also says that will diminish over time. But I did exactly what the book said. You know, I had that. I'm going out and telling them. I remember my one son, I took him to Alateen. He said, I'll go. And he got a girl's phone number. I was like, no, that's not why you're there. He's like, whew, God bless him. But, you know, through the process of, as I see that powerlessness in all of my affairs. See, I'm not only powerless over alcohol, I'm powerless over the unmanageability of my family. You know, and I remember I got to the place, it was like the only amend that I could make was to move, because it was causing them more harm for me to stay there, because they were unwilling to do what I, and they didn't want me doing what I had to do. They didn't. You know, my husband at the time, he said to me, he says, you know, I'd rather have that drunk on the sofa than the woman you became today. And I spoke to my sponsor, and she said, well, I think it's time for you to go. Now, sometimes, you know, people, the book describes family do get back together, they reunite, but not necessarily in the same home. My family has reunited through the process of the 12 steps. My daughter just recently moved back. She moved, they had all moved, like, the 400 some miles away within the first year and a half of my recovery. A year of my recovery, I moved out. Within 6 months later, they moved to Pittsburgh. The husband, or the ex-husband now, at the time, and three kids went to Pittsburgh. And my daughter would call me periodically and tell me about what's going on up there. And it was hard not to get into her business. And I kept saying to her, you need to stay out of their business. You know, my husband and his girlfriend at the time, I said, and you just mind your own business. You respect her. this was hard for me to say to her. Because I'm one, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I want to get in there and condemn and criticize and judge, you know. But I thank God for sponsorship because I stayed out of it. And I told her she needed to mind her business and stay out of it. And eventually she came to live with us. And just recently she bought her home. Her and her boyfriend has bought a home together. But what she shared with me prior to coming in alcohol, before, you know, she moved back with us, she called me up one day, and this is all direct result of God and the ninth step. Thank God for the ninth step. She said, Mom, she said, Dad walked in the store today. She says, and he stood in front of me. And she said, for a brief moment, she said, I felt closer to you 400 and some miles away than him standing directly in front of me. Because I stayed out of her business. I taught her through the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. See, we don't have to take them through the steps. The book describes that the demonstration of these principles lies ahead in their homes and their jobs. See, I can be here and sound so good in front of you, but what do I do when I walk out of these rooms? Be with me. Let me show you that I live this stuff. It's not all talk. It is exactly what they have taught me and my sponsor and the people who have come before them. It's not what you say. It's what you do. And these steps are an action thing. I can read them all I want. I can pray all I want. I can go to meetings all I want. But if I don't take the actions that are outlined in this book, I will never experience that joy, as the book describes. You know, that God insists on us being happy. Now, I do go through things, and we all go through things. But it, like I said, it's a process of learning. Learning to let go. Let go of those old ideas. Let go of that stuff you think is going to hold you together. You see, I've tried it time and time again. And, you know, I'm one of the alcoholics. It's like I came in with everything. So through the process of learning that stuff's not going to fix me, gets me closer to God. Now, sponsoring women and sharing my experience, strength, and hope is my lifeline. And like I said, I've sponsored many women over the years. I've watched them go. I've watched them grow. Not so much as having to sponsor them, but just sharing my experience with a woman one-on-one. I don't have to be a sponsor. I just need to, when that woman's there and she's hurting, I'm like, you know what? This is what I did. See if it works for you. I remember this one woman, as I was going through the process of the separation, this woman came, and my sponsor always shared with me, she said, Doreen, everything that you go through is because you're going to share it with another one of God's kids. And I was like, okay. Now, I don't know what that meant at the time, but I just went through a separation from my husband, and this woman came down from Pittsburgh, and she was going through a process of wanting to separate from her husband, and she didn't know if she could do it or not. And I just went through it, and I was like, I was excited. My sponsor here was like, I wasn't excited of the separation process. I was excited over, oh my God, I'll be able to help her through her separation, if need be. Because I just did it, and I didn't get drunk. I mean, these are things that I definitely would have drank over. But see, somewhere along the line, God has removed that problem. Now it's life. It's living. And the book describes that this spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. I can pray. I can come in here, share my experience, strength, and hope. But unless I actually put it into action, will I know what you people are talking about. Thanks for letting me share. God bless.